Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at the blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. I usually upload a show to that once a week. I've been doing a better job in the last few weeks of getting you guys one on a regular. We went Sunday this week instead of Friday, Friday or Thursday, just because it worked out for me a little bit better schedule-wise. But don't worry, I will have another episode for you on Wednesday. You are also listening to the podcast through the most efficient way, it's popping up on your iTunes. Go to the iTunes search engine and enter LORDGAUL or enter Warman Kickfighting Show, and my podcast pops right up. So, with Big K1, K1 event coming up next month, with the Big Glory event coming up, I really wanted to step back and take the time to say, all right, how can we look at the kickfighting sport as a whole? I've been meaning to do a, you know, state of the game episode, and normally I like to have guests on for that as we explore it, but I really wanted to go ahead and take the time to do it now. I might do another one in January, but I wanted to look at some things because some of the kickboxing news that's been emerging lately has been about state of the game things. I'm going to clearly talk about Spike TV separation between Glory and Spike TV. I'm going to talk about Bazooka Joe, Joseph Antolini. He kind of had this little rant about athletes and selling themselves. Liverkick.com, definitely go to Liverkick.com, and they've got a write-up on what the next TV station should do. And we're going to go ahead and look at, you know, the next TV deal that they have with the U.S. provider in the Glory. We're going to go ahead and look at that. We're going to look at some of those issues. I'm going to add some of my own thoughts. I'm going to bring up things that I've said before and some things that might be new to some of you guys. But let's just explore kickboxing for a while. So first and foremost, my thoughts on the Glory separation between them and Spike TV. And, of course, it had some hits and misses. And, you know, they had a really good event in San Diego that did some pretty good. Had a good draw, you know, because they had Xavier Vinny on that card. Good draw there. They had a decent rating, I want to say, for the first Holtzkin and Daniels fight. And I think their peak for the brand happened when Nicky Holtzkin on the Japan card, that was played on delay, but it was played on a great weekend because there was no correlation. They didn't cross boxing. It kind of sat by itself. It sat alone. So I thought it was a good time to do that card. I thought it all, you know, worked out for them as far as some of those cards would go. They had some events that were scheduled with boxing events, major boxing events or major MMA cards in particular, I think mostly major boxing events. And that affected the consistency of the rating. Then they started moving the time slot from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock, then back to 9, then back to 10 twice. And, you know, as far as I'm going off of the central time zone, who knows? I mean, if you're on the East Coast, are you watching, you know, kickboxing 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock sometimes, you know, when it starts? You know, some of those things are definitely going to affect how people look at the brand of kickboxing. Like they're going to look at, you know, when do I get a chance to see it? I thought their best thing that they'd done of late was they moved it to the Friday. But now the question is, moving forward, what do you do? How do you get this wonderful product out there, but doesn't seem to be doing its, you know, it's not picking up to American TV audiences because of various different moves. So my first thought is, number one, when I first heard that the deal had broken down, because again, this is something I've been reporting to you guys for quite some time. If you listen to the podcast, I've talked about how they've been searching out, you know, possibly going to Showtime, and I've been talking about for a while that there's an idea that the break was coming. And then during the last event, if you followed my tweets, or if you followed Liverkick.com, you would have gotten the warning that this was going to happen, that the TV deal was up and it looked like it wasn't going to get renewed. And we would have told you if it was going to get renewed. So when we saw that it was coming to an end, first thing I thought was, okay, number one, the Glory brand has got to reflect the best kickboxers on the planet. That's very, very important to me. If you're the best kickboxing organization, you got to reflect the best fighters. What I mean by that is simply the use of the undercard to put a whole bunch of American fighters on the card so that they can grow their brand, you know, underneath, you know, the cloud of good high-level kickboxing at the top, and then the undercard is filled of not great kickboxing. Just, it's not that you guys are not going to be talented one day, that your skill's not going to grow. I just look at, not all those fights, but I'd say the majority of those fights, they seem like fights that were put together that probably weren't going to draw in a local audience, and they were just kickboxers who, you know, potentially one day might have the opportunity to compete at the highest level. Like and that's just a big might there. Might's the word that he used. But the whole thing kind of goes down to there's a chance that these guys could be something down the road. But they're never going to be that if they don't get to have fights. So we've got to put them on these glory cards because glory is the only thing that's going to give them kickboxing fights. Because we've got some, you know, coaches, we've got athletes interested in doing kickboxing. We just don't have the promoters who want to focus on it. It's just if you're a promoter right now, you're going to do anything. You're going to do MMA. It's the easiest way to make money. Boxing's another thing, but boxers get paid pretty good right off the jump, so it's hard to spend money on them right off the jump. Most people are going to lean towards, if you're starting a promotion in the States, you're going to start with mixed martial arts because most people have this understanding of it's the UFC or it's something else, and it's easier to be something else. Whereas with kickboxing, they're not, it's glory and something else. There's, what is this kickboxing thing? You know, this isn't the 80s anymore. So when I look at, like, I'm just going to go ahead and look at the France card. And the last French card was good, too. Well, excuse me, the Milan card. The French card before, the last time we went to Europe, was a good card, too. Drew a good crowd. I see Varga Adamczyk for the featherweight title. I see Younga Vakadov. I see Anatoly Moiseev. I see Elite, I mean, the tournament. Karim Gaji, Johan Kangulo, Mirtho Grunhardt. And then, you know, the Josh Shanti Petrosian fight, of course. And then, of course, the main event being Van Roosmalen and Sitsang Vignang. When I look at that card, I say this card represents the best fighters on the planet. This represents the best kickboxers in the world. I've got guys who are competing for titles, and I've got guys who are high-level guys who are getting fights on the undercard. That is how it's going to be. That's how it's got to be for the Glory brand. I mean, I understand if you want to do something else. I understand if, you know, it's important to you to try to develop talent in the States, but that's going to be done on something that's not your glory card. Your glory card should always represent the best fighters in the world. That's how it's got to be. Or you've got to have a separate event that simply focuses on just what those athletes are. So give you an example. If you look at K1, back in the day, K1 used to have the Japan Grand Prix, which was usually all Japanese guys, maybe one foreign guy. I remember they had Bob Sapp one time, whatever. But the whole goal to that is this. They are not catching up to the bigger heavyweights in the world. So we need to have an event that's separate, that's going to sell our audience on a young star up and coming. And the whole purpose of this tournament is just American names. So their whole person of their, excuse me, for us, it'd be the just American names, but for them, it'd be just Japanese names. Like, that was the whole goal to the tournament. There was a couple super fights in there, but that was the goal to it. And you knew beforehand, like, okay, that's what the goal of this tournament is. The Glory brand, while on Spike, seemed to be a combination of trying to balance having the best fighters in the world and having American title or American athletes on their live broadcast. I think that was the main thing that Spike was worried about. They were worried that people wouldn't watch if they didn't have someone from the USA to cheer from. And it's understandable. You know what I'm saying? Like, how many people in the States know that the All Blacks won the Rugby World Cup the other day? Like how many people know that happened on Saturday? Because they're not invested, because they don't know the athletes. They don't know the people who are competing in rugby. So why would they, you know, put any time in that? So how many people in the States, how many people in Canada know, you know, South America, how many people know what's happening in the world of rugby? It is a select audience. And if you want to go to a bigger audience, you know, with a brand that people are foreign to, ideally you've got to try to put someone in there for them to root for. The problem with that logic is they don't know who the American guy is either. You know, so if you're going to slide them in there, you gotta do it in a way where they were told before your big product. So let's go to perfect example, Raymond Daniels. Worked itself out over time. Raymond Daniels, of course, when he started, got an undercard win over Brian Foster, and then he goes and fights in the tournament, and, you know, are like, they've got a welterweight tournament. Welterweight tournament is Nicky Holtzkin, Joseph Antolini, and Raymond Daniels, and the name eludes me right now. There's one other athlete, but we had four guys who were representing the best welterweights on the planet, okay? Daniels, resume-wise, was not one of those four guys. He was not one of the top four guys. You can make an argument for the other three, but you cannot make an argument for this last name getting on that list. Like, I mean, I'm not upset, not saying that he did anything wrong, because he didn't. Daniels just took the opportunity that was given to him. But then it comes out that Glory was very important to them, that they get a USA name in there. So they put Daniels on the card. And Daniels went out and competed hard, and he lost. But then, of course, Daniels turned it around, got some wins, and he's really been growing on the brand. On TV, he's been growing. And they've been throwing him guys that he can get stoppages on because he does the cool kicks and that kind of stuff, whatever. But when I look at that, and I look at how he was moved, and I go, all right, it seemed like it worked out here okay. But did a lot of his fights represent beating the best fighters in the world, which is what the Glory brand should represent if it's the best brand in the world? And I would say no. I would say that that didn't happen. So the moment I saw that there was this break between Spike, I knew that we were no longer going to get, and again, like I said, it can work out. You look at the fight with, we had Joe Schilling, and then Joe Schilling, of course, he's, you know, emerging on the scene, and then all of a sudden, you know, you get this a crazy undercard. Well, I won't say it was a crazy undercard upset, but it's definitely, you know, it was definitely significant when Mike LaMare was, it was kind of an upset when all of a sudden Wayne Barrett burst in the scene and stopped him. And then when Wayne Barrett got that fight, got that win, and Joe Schilling was the other kickboxing name of a USA guy, they decided that Wayne Barrett, for his, you know, next fight, or his, you know, he got a fight on the Los Angeles card, and they decided, okay, you've got to be on the next TV one. You've got a couple wins, you've got to be on the next TV card, and he's going to fight Joe Schilling. And it ended up working out. It ended up being a very entertaining fight. And then Wayne Barrett, of course, has proved himself over time. So you've got two examples of Barrett proving himself as a good athlete to get some good wins up there, and you've got Raymond Daniels. But for the most part, you've got things where you've got guys who just, you look at the tournament that Dustin Jacoby just won, and there are three guys that should not be Glory level talents. Can be Glory level talents down the road, but they were pretty much brought in for, it looked like, okay, we're going to get Jacoby some names and some guys that he could beat. And I'm fine with that. I'm fine with you guys putting together a tournament thinking that's the goal. Now, I'm not saying if you're one of those athletes and you're listening to this, you're saying, oh, you know, you're not respecting my skills. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying when this tournament was put together, the idea behind it seemed to be Dustin Jacoby versus these guys, you know, these guys. And if you guys were there, you probably realized that that was the case. I don't think the goal was for any of those other guys to win the tournament. If it happened, awesome for them. But the whole purpose of it was for Dustin Jacoby, a guy who had this great story because he won that first tournament, goes from that great story all the way to, you know, competing, it's the best in the world, sometimes rush, sometimes short notice, but just going out there, being a prize fighter, earning a check. And if you look at that, and you look at where you know, where his career was, they realized that they'd given him a lot of sharks, and they were like, let's slow it down, and let's see if we can get this guy a lot more opportunities to compete with guys who should move his career. And I thought that they did a good job with that step back tournament. I just don't know if I feel like that tournament should have been on TV. So I'm looking at these kind of examples, and I go, all right, you get yourself in a position where you have a Wayne Barrett workout, and you have a Daniels workout, and you have a Dustin Jacoby that doesn't go the way that you thought it was going to go, but you continue to try to push it, to try to make it happen. These things are fine if they're not done on your Glory brand broadcast. They've got to be done somewhere else. They need to have like a, you know, Glory Fight Night-esque series that didn't represent the best cards. You know, it's got to be, these are fights that's going to move you. Maybe you just got to partner with a local promotion and something like that to make that happen. But the way that it was going, I thought that a lot of it was forced and pushed on us. And even if you go through like Glory statistics and Glory rankings, you see some names of guys who barely competed for the brand, like Andrew Capel. You know, like you see that and you're like, wow, just names of guys who just kind of pop up. And you're like, when did I see them compete? You know, Toshio Matsumoto, when did I see him compete? You know, it's just, there needed to be a more direct effort into making sure that the Glory brand represented the best kickboxing on the planet. And I don't feel they did that. I thought that their effort went into, most importantly and above all, this idea that the brand has got to sell to a U.S. audience by representing what the UFC does in some certain ways. Like, I thought that that was the goal to it. And as I look at that, I go, man, all right, how can we clean this up? How can we do this better? And I'm like, you know, I think that the best way is if they get a new TV deal, they've got to abandon some of the things that they did before. So I look at Spike and I look at the separation. And I think it's so important to me that if Glory is the best kickboxing brand, that they represent the best kickboxing fighters. I really believe that Spike had gotten away from that and they were just looking to try to make stars out of guys and get them to the top on their brand's major television, you know, space. And I'll give you another example of this. K1 did it with Koshin. And when Koshin came out there and people were just upset that this, you know, pretty much amateur brand of kickboxing, you know, of course, Masaki Nori and other elite stars emerged out of it. But like the idea in the beginning was people felt like they are forcing this thing on us. They're like, we know what elite kickboxing is. We only get so much on a TV slot. Why are you trying to force this fight on us? So when they started to put the fights on YouTube and they started to put the fights, you know, all those tournament fights up there, I go, this is where they belong. This is where they belong. They belong on YouTube. It's an amateur brand. The kids will be stars one day, but let's put it off of my TV time slot. My TV time slot needs to represent the best in the world. I think that at one point, Spike was only worried about putting on something that people would watch. I think that that was it. So when I saw that and I was like, all right, split's happening. That's very, very important to me. Thank you, Glory, for introducing, you know, kickboxing to an American audience. And the people who watched it, even the MMA guys who watched it, they really enjoyed the brand. It's just that it just had like a the consistency of it didn't work out. So we move on. What's moving forward? Who's going to be the new TV provider and so on? What mistakes can they avoid? The first thing that comes to mind is whoever pops in, you are going to need a three-hour TV slot. And the reason why I think it's important that you get a three-hour TV slot at minimum, hopefully they get on something like a Showtime. They really should be on a premium cable provider. That way you've got more freedom. You can do more stuff with it. You can get rid of this, you know, Glory main card and Glory series card. And it could just be one card, just like K1 back in the day was one card. It's Showtime was one card. There doesn't need to be two separate cards. You know, one representing this part of the Glory show and this the other part. No, we just go ahead and do the brand right off the top. Make it simple on ourselves. You know, like let's not reinvent the wheel right now. We already know how to do this. We already know how to have successful mixed martial arts shows in the States. We already know how to do successful boxing shows in the States. We have a history of doing successful kickboxing. We need to go ahead and go back to that type of visual, that type of, okay, I'm going to sit down and I know I'm going to be chilling here for about 3.5 hours, 3 hours, but I know I'm going to get the brand top to bottom. And people will circulate in as they will. But ideally, that's what you got to start with. Give yourself enough time to put your brand out there so that people can see the best in the world, okay? So first and foremost, whoever the new TV provider is, start thinking you need a three-hour slot. Even we look at the WWE, once upon a time, you know, they used to be 1 hour, or excuse me, 1 hour in some broadcast that they had in the morning, then 2 hour slots, then 3 hour slots as the brand got bigger over the years. But I just go back to that and I laugh because I'm thinking, you know, as much as people might look down on the WWE brand, ain't going nowhere. You know what I'm saying? I'm already excited about some of their next events. So I look at that and I look at, you know, what the new TV provider could possibly put together. And it's very, very important to me that they make sure all the athletes represent the best fighters in the world. And second thing is they need to make sure that all of the fights or their events cover a three-hour time slot, because that's that we need at least that. And I want to go ahead and take the time to explore a couple of things that was brought up. I'll go ahead and go to liverkick.com. He brought up a couple of examples. I'll explore them. Some of them you guys have heard before. He brought up the intro thing. I've said this on the show before that, and of course, he being Dave Walsh writer at liverkick.com. I've brought up this before as far as changing the intro, because I thought, as soon as I saw the intro, I remember I tweeted right away. I was like, why do we have this as the intro? Why doesn't the intro represent the athletes that are fighting for the brand? I don't know who these dudes are. I don't know who these dudes are doing these weird things right now. I want to see the people who represent who I'm going to watch. And, you know, he brought up some points about how they should show their champions, so on, whatever. But that intro had always been trash. Fighter intros. This is something that I brought up many times over the years since Glorious began. Let's just go back to, if you guys want to know what I'm talking about, go and watch Gokhan Saki enter the ring when he fights. And this isn't even one of the better ones. This is just some more recent ones. It's a solid one. Well, I can't say too recent. It's like 4 or 5 years ago. But, like, it's not in the heyday of the entrances. But go ahead and go watch Gokhan Saki as he's getting ready to enter when he fights Daniel Gita for the first time. And it has a feel to it. It has a feel to it. And go watch Remy Bojowski as he's making his, you know, tournament runs, those 2 years in a row that he won it. And just his music, there was like a feel to it. Like you got chills when you heard his music. And everybody talks about how, man, Remy did such a great job in choosing his musical interest because it was something that just represented him. It had that eerie feeling to it. It was just a beautiful, well-thought-out music that, you know, it's kind of associated with the Western. And I'm like, that's how it's done. It's a way that the athlete can sell themselves. And the Joseph Vontolini, you know, kind of, you know, blow up that he had when he was talking about how people don't sell themselves and so on. Your entrance is one of the easiest ways to sell you. And something that would be cured in the 3-hour time slot. And I've talked about this before. Everybody, every fight forum, everybody in the kickboxing world has talked about what the absence of entrances has done. And you've got to put something to it. And I remember when I first saw what Scott Coker was doing with Bellator, and he had the big screen, he had the entrances and stuff like that, whatever. And I'm like, wow, this guy gets it. This guy who's done Muay Thai before, he had a good history of doing kickboxing promotion, then Muay Thai promotion, then into MMA. But he understands the promotional aspects because production means something in kickboxing. Very important. Don't just think that the brand of kickboxing is always going to be awesome. People are always going to want to see that type of fighting. It's always going to be awesome. But if you're going to add to it, there are things that you must do to kind of search out the athletes so that you get a better handle of who they are and what they do. And that was missing. That was definitely missing from Glory after a little while. I thought that they had the countdown shows, but the countdown shows weren't super popular. And I just think that they weren't as consistent. And I just think that they didn't do the best job of selling the athletes. One of the best ways of selling the athletes is just an intro. Let people have their own music. Let the room get dark. And let's, you know, put a light on them and follow them out. That's really, really important. So make sure we got to add the fighter intros. That's a huge one. Next one that he brings up is video packages. I was just watching a video package just the other day. And it's crazy what they can accomplish in such a short period of time. And the one that I was watching was I decided to go watch Masato as he was getting ready to go against Drago Gago. And of course, Drago was from, you know, war-torn Armenia and showed him as a little kid. And it shows like, you know, when Armenia was, you know, he'd been in Holland for a really, really long time. But showed explosions and it kind of showed that feel to it and so on. And then all of a sudden it shows him as an athlete. Nobody sold themselves more in their ring entrances than Gago Drago over the last 25 years of kickboxing. Nobody, you knew that entrance, you knew that the Drago dance, as he says, the only dance that he knows, like you knew him for that. This video added from what you knew about the athlete and the Drago dance, and you go from there to production that just shows, all right, this is a little bit deeper. This is where he's from, war torn, so on, whatever, whatever. And then all of a sudden you're into the athlete. And then of course you go to the Masatos. Masato is the star, you know, so it's always him, you know, looking good, wearing suits, showing his model side, showing his kickboxer size. He was like the star. So I look at that and I go, wow, these things aren't very long, you know, just take a couple minutes. And K1 did such a great job with those videos. You could literally just go online and just look at some of those old videos and you're like, wow, they really did do a fantastic job of making this part of the brand stick out. And I think that video packages in a 3-hour time slot, in particular, if you get it on something like a Showtime or HBO, that's going to work wonders. I really, truly believe that is great for the brand if you bring that back. So video packages, definitely agree on. The roadmap thing I've been saying about kickboxing since K1 went away. The moment we didn't have a K1 World Grand Prix, which was the biggest news when it happened, you know, a few years ago, 4 years ago. When that didn't happen, the thing that I went off was, man, it really kind of shows the end. And it was the thing that motivated me to do the kickboxing documentary. Nothing speaks to the end of kickboxing like this idea that, man, it's We don't have the map to end all maps. We don't have a elimination, and we don't have a K1 World Grand Prix. That's the Super Bowl of our sport. So I've used the term roadmap, something to follow. We need to know how this is going to happen. And even the UFC struggles with this. They struggle with who gets title shots in some of their divisions and how to do it. Just all of a sudden, guys will get on some win streaks, and then you'll hear the winner of this fight's going to be in title contention, not necessarily up for the title. Like, you'll hear that quite often. So I listened to that, and I listened to that breakdown in my mind. I'm like, all right, how do we go about making sure this doesn't happen to kickboxing again? How do we make sure that the next brand, the next year of the sport, does what we've already got, the Amsterdam card and the Milan card represent the best kickboxing on the planet. That's what those cards look like. But now we need to know where those fights are going. So if I go back to I'd say the best year of K1 would probably be around the best years, I'd say between, I'll say 98 to 2002. And the reason why I don't go before, it's not like those weren't high-level kickboxing events. It's just that they didn't have a lot of events when they had K1 at its peak. When those years where we had, Hoog and Hoost won his first one, I think, in 97 and or 98. And then you look at Peter Arts and so on. Those first few, there's maybe a couple events a year. It seems like there was more. There wasn't a lot. But, man, in 2000, 2001, you win a regional tournament. Regional tournament earns you a slot on the European Grand Prix. European Grand Prix earns you a slot in the elimination. Elimination earns you a slot in the World Grand Prix, K1 World Grand Prix. And you're like, okay, if I just keep winning like this, it gets me here. That's what we mean by roadmap. It just can't be I'm winning and then somebody else gets a slot. It can't work that way, not for the brand long term. It's got to always be this is where it's going. And that's kind of what the tournaments do. They made that easier. But we could just make it simple. It can be a tournament bracket, but it doesn't necessarily need to be a one-night tournament. I really thought that when Thai Fight first came on the scene, I was like, Thai Fight's going to last forever. Like, the way they're doing it, great job. They've got events that span over, a couple of months. So you just win here, and that's what you're doing. They could do it. They really could. At the top of every year, they could go, we're going to have a 64-man tournament, and you're just going to win week by week, and you know when you're competing, and you know what the card's going to be, and then you'll have fights every year that say this person's going to earn their way into a 64 slot next year. And literally, like, that's got to be the breakdown to it. Like, you got to piece it together just like that. Start off with your best glory fighters at, let's just say, lightweight. Of course, that's the big one. 454 pounds, 70 kgs. And you're going to go ahead and you can easily put together 64 guys. Easily. And you can go ahead and go off their histories and say, this is how my seeding is going to work. But even if you don't agree with some of the 64, those guys will still have to match up with some of the better guys. And then it'll just work itself out over the year. You get down towards the end of the year and you got your championship. You can break it down like that and have entire cards. I think that that represents kickboxing, the way kickboxing does things, a lot better and a lot more efficient than the way we see right now, where we see this good guy fights good fight guy fights good guy, and then one day we're going to decide there's going to be a champion. Fortunately for Glory, they've got this event where right now they have these four-man tournaments, and the winner of the four-man tournament usually gets the title shot. But then we had Xavier Vinny won one of those four-man tournaments, and he didn't end up going anywhere. He just kind of won the tournament just to be winning the tournament in his hometown. So I think that if we're moving forward, it's very, very important that we focus on this idea that, man, we need to make sure that the best athletes are moving in a direction towards the title and their actions move them sort towards the title. So I think year-round tournaments, as opposed to one-night tournaments, would do the thing. I'm still a tournament guy through and through. I like the idea of it. Like, that's another one that he has on the list. He says, chill with tournaments. He's not the biggest fan of tournaments, Dave. I am the opposite there. I am a big fan of tournaments, in particular if the tournament is for the championship. If it's just for any old reason, if it earns you a slot into the 64 or something like that, whatever, I think that works for me. But I think that I've always been a fan of tournaments and the attrition that it caused, and the way that it asks for athletes to dig deep in different ways. So I'm always going to be a fan of that. But man, it's very, very important to me as I look at the kickboxing brand and I look at where the sport's going, that we really focus on maps and tournaments mixing together, because it's the best way for people to say, oh, okay, and this is what's coming next week. I'm telling you, the 64-man thing is very, very something that they could accomplish quite easily. They just need to go ahead and keep working with it. And then they also need separate events. You need your Glory event, and you need something else. Like, Glory Series can be a separate event. It doesn't have to be your big Glory card. So in the way you've got your UFC pay-per-views and you got your fight nights, they need Glory Series to be something like that. Like, it's just, to me, I think it's the most efficient to work it out that way. He says, don't take vacations without assurance of a future. That is something that I thought Glory did a better job of this past year. I thought last year they had the pay-per-view, which I wasn't a big fan of when they did the pay-per-view. And then after the pay-per-view, they didn't do an event for like 4 months because I guess they lost a lot of money there. I don't have numbers of what they lost, but it didn't work out to the way they thought. They had a very, very, very low pay-per-view number, even though I got it because I love you. I look at that and I go, man, I think that as a whole, kickboxing can benefit greatly if we can get the consistency of event every month. And Glory's had some like really, really good events that just, I mean, it surprised me to how much they were consistent this past year. I think we only had like a 2-month gap at the biggest, maybe 2.5, but I thought they did a really good job of having events all the time this year. That is a, I'm not going to just sit here and butcher everything. There's some step back to say Glory did a good job with this. K1 and its heyday didn't have an event every month. They had something close to it, but not something that they were able to pull off all the time. So I think that if they can be as consistent this year, next year, I think that worked well for me. I just think that it's got to tie in with the maps. We got to know where it's going. We got to know what's happening a little bit more. The other thing that's going to sound weird, but I think it's going to be huge for them, is they need to get down with co-promoting, not in terms of, okay, we need to do this to make this happen, but you need to use local promotions who are already having successful kickboxing shows, like you see in France, like you see in Holland, like you see in Russia, and you've got to say, hey, the winner of your tournament earns themselves a slot on my Glory. They earn themselves a slot into my Glory brand. This is going to get them a Glory contract. You need to do stuff like that. That way you don't spend money and you have a brand out there making things work for you. And I think that that's something that Glory really got away from that. I think K1 did. I don't think K1 spent K1 money in all those events in the early 2000s that were just known as K1. People just put K1 on a lot of their events just to get people interested, and they still do. There are still cards out there that are K1 rules or have K1, you know, in the title. It's still, even though the brand's not what it was, it still resonates with people. And I think Glory, if they're getting bigger, that's something that they can do to help their brand be seen as the number one thing in kickboxing. They really can go, all right, this brand in England has been putting on great kickboxing shows. They've been selling out good audiences. I think that I'm going to go to them and say, hey, give me a list of who your elite guys are in the country. And if you put them in a tournament, I will give you the Glory name to put on your brand. And the winner of your tournament will earn a contract and let them sell it. And it's like getting to the big show, because that's what it was all about. Back in K1's heyday, it was about getting to the big show. And that's what we really need to focus kickboxing on. Everything we do leads to that walkout and the big crowds. At that time, it was going to Japan. Now it's going to Glory, you know, so we want to make sure that we do that. We want to make sure that we represent that. And I think that that could be easily accomplished if they use not necessarily co-promotion and the two of us get together and we put this brand out there, but in terms of we're going to go ahead and lend you our name and we're going to give the winner of your tournament the right to get into our organization. And that's an easy way to save money and still put your brand out there. And then, of course, you've got to have something where it's like, all right, you guys got to make sure that you put this on our YouTube channel or something like that, whatever. But you want to make sure that you do things like that, inexpensive ways to grow your kickboxing brand. Next thing that he has on this list is, let me see, kickboxing's kickboxing. I think I've already talked about that. Just that's who we are as a brand and so on. So I think at my wrap up to what my, you know, my rant is here, I kind of was all over the place. I apologize for that. 34 minutes of just me talking about what's going on in kickboxing world, making kickboxing better. I'll go ahead and sum it up like this. Spike was a good step, but we see things that we, you know, did well, did wrong, that we can improve on. And I think that when I look at that brand and I look at what's going on, the thing that first goes through my mind is, okay, this is what we're going to do. To move forward as a kickboxing community, first and foremost, we need to make sure that the elite fighters fight in the Glory brand. We need to try to have a 3-hour time slot so that we can get all the athletes in. We need to do things where the athletes have the opportunity to sell themselves. So, you know, whether we bring back big vid packages, entrances, that kind of deal, whatever, those things are all huge. And then we've got to look at things that we did well and things that we did wrong and kind of build. And that's something that historically kickboxing kind of never did. They've always tried to repeat something that was successful before and try to do it over. So you look at Bob Sapp. Hung Man Choi is birthed from Bob Sapp. The reason why is because their greatest ratings K1 ever had in Japan was when they brought out this huge guy with, you know, an 8-pack that weighed over 350 pounds. Like, he's this huge guy. I don't know how much he actually weighed, but ideally, they brought him out and everybody wanted to see this huge guy. Underneath him, you still had awesome kickboxing cards and awesome kickboxing performances. And what they did after they had that, instead of focusing on the developed talent, they tried to repeat the old success. So as soon as they got a Hung Man Choi type, they tried to bring him out there and see if he could sell the same way. An Akebono type. Let's go ahead and sell people on these huge, massive guys doing kickboxing. Because sometimes even when they get knocked out, people care and they want to see it. So that used to be how kickboxing would do things. They would just try to repeat what got them success before, as opposed to saying, all right, what's going to give us longevity in this game? And there's got to be a combination of, you know what, we did pretty good when we had Andy Hu, you know, winning fights, and we had pretty good when Peter Aris was winning fights. We need to get ourselves back to that. We need to get ourselves back to elite fighters representing our brand and being the best in the world. And I think that this is something that whoever the new TV provider, and they think it's going to be announced Monday or Tuesday, so where I'm at, it'd be tomorrow or, you know, the day after that. I think that that brand, it's so important that they say, we need this 3-hour time slot. Gotta have it. We gotta have the opportunity to show people the best kickboxing brand on the planet. It's vital to our success. So moving forward from that, I'm going to go ahead and get into a couple other news. Badahari. Yes, Badahari. Badahari is finally sentenced to 2 years. He already did 9 months of the 2 years. You guys remember that before. So now it's looking like he's got to go back for 6 months. And then some video emerged where apparently he got into, it looked like a, you know, playful or serious slap, depending upon who you talk to. And he gets into it with some hotel that he'd gone to. And I guess the rooms were full after he'd returned to something. And he's, you know, it seemed like he's upset, but it seemed to be that happened. That news emerged like the day that he was, you know, that he got the sentence, that he found out he had to go back to jail for 6 more months. So go ahead and let him go back, finish his 6 more months. And he is one of the characters that does not have to. He's another guy. If you look at his vid packages, he was sold really, really well. Like, he was brought, Badahari, for his faults. He was sold to the kickboxing audience and sold himself to the kickboxing audience like nobody in the last 15 years. Nobody has done that much work towards their own personal brand. And I definitely need something that gets us back to that. We're not there. We're not there with all of our athletes. So it's important that these guys get these opportunities to sell themselves. And it doesn't mean that you've got to be an ogre. You've got to call people out all the time. You could be very much a family man like a Nicky Holtzkin. And then you all of a sudden you appeal to an audience that's like, you know what? That's me. I know that struggle of going to the gym, working hard, turning around, making sure that I get my finances to, you know, my family, and I'm a faith-oriented guy, and like, you want to mix that all together. And some of you guys are straight killers, you know, trying to be in fights all the time, and like, that's just who you are as a fighter. Like, that is your identity. You're a tougher guy. You come, you bring it, you bring the war. I remember I watched this thing where they're talking about one of the guys on a legacy card talks about how he didn't have a gym and he has taught himself how to fight and that kind of stuff, whatever. And he went out there and he competed, and that's how they sold him. As I'm watching the fight, I'm like, wow, this guy, who of course I don't believe 1 second, just got into the sport without training. But to sell himself that way, to say, I just kind of did this in my backyard, just kind of trained myself. I mean, it'll make people laugh, but it'll make them watch just to see what your skills look like. So I think it's important that people get to a consistency in selling themselves, and nobody did it like Botter. This, unfortunately, is the bad way of Botter doing it. as I said before, he already served 9-10 months of it. He's got to go back and do, you know, it's looking like at least, you know, 5-6 more, you know, in jail. And then I think he could do the rest on community service or whatever, $40,000 fine, that kind of stuff, whatever. But I just go, man, this guy, if he can get his stuff straight, everybody will come watch him. If Badr Hari gets out and he has his kickboxing glory debut in France, it's selling out. It's selling out. They've got a huge Moroccan community. He's a guy who sold himself over the years. We need to get more opportunities where guys do stuff like that. Going to go ahead and talk about a couple of fight results that happened. And clearly the big one, as it's always big, because it's Bukau. Bukau goes out there and gets what can only be described as, you know, a Bukau slaughter job, because Bukau is Bukau, and he goes out there and he gets a TKO victory second round over Gu Hui. I believe I'm pronouncing that right. Shout out to Gu for going out and selling himself. Gu got real mean in the face-off. He wore chains, these big, huge chains, as he walked out to the fight. And then the fight started, and then it was clear that Bukau Benchimek was way better than him. And Bukau came out, landed a slick, you know, high kick to score down early in the fight. Hugh got up, was game to keep fighting back, but he just wasn't good enough. Took some knees, and then he got in a really weird position where he was hurt, and he dropped his knee into Bukau's chest. The knee then, or his head then, slid under Bukau's arm. Bukau got him into, you know, took his left hand, went under the opposite arm or the right arm of Q, and then he put his right hand under the other arm. So he's pretty much got his head trapped under his left armpit, and he's got both of his arms tied behind his back, and he lands a couple knees to the body, and Hugh goes down. And it's all over YouTube, real easy to find. There's one thing that kind of shows me, you know, Bukau, another athlete who sold himself well over the years. Look at the difference between Bukau, Bukau's walkout, Bukau's, you know, dance at, you know, the martial arts event, the King of Martial Arts event that he kind of, you know, emerged in the international scene with. You look at Bukau, he sells himself different than other Thai fighters sell themselves. Almost nobody remembers the first two guys who fought, the first two Thai guys or the first Thai guy who fought for the K1 Max brand. Like, nobody remembers that dude. Bukau, different aura, different, you know, swag, if you will. He just did things in his own way. And I look at him, and I look at him as an athlete, and I go, wow, this guy did it. He is such a star that when he fights, his fights emerge online. Like, they emerge online almost immediately. And that shows. I remember Liam Harrison fought over here in the States. And sometimes the Lion Fight fights, they don't get on YouTube for a while. And when Liam Harrison came over here and fought, his fight was up later that night because he's got such a huge following in England. They make sure that he gets out there, that people know about him and his brand. Like, they make it a point to go out there and say, you got to see my guy fight. And we need more of that. We for sure need more of that. And Bukau going out and destroying this guy, he's way better. I mean, it's just, that's the game. It's always going to be that way. But definitely shout out to Bukau going out there, putting on a masterful performance. And he really, glory, hey. He's a kickboxing star. You got to try to get him. You got to see if there's a way that you can bring him in, even just to share him, just to use him once or twice in your show a year. He doesn't even need to fight the best guys in the world. He could just be in a solid fight. You could use him like, you know, how people use good fighters late in their years. If he wants to compete for your best, go ahead. But right now, he's getting consistent work, but we still want to see him fight the elite. And I think right now, he can make his money fighting these non-elite guys, and every once in a while, he can go into glory and fight some guys who are serviceable. But he is a name that you don't want to forget in the kickboxing game. Other fights from that card, there was a female tournament that had some very significant fights in it because Anissa Mexen, who was considered going into the weekend the best in the world at around 115 pounds, very, very talented female fighter, she gets into the tournament. She beats Zhu Zhurong in the first round by decision. And then E. Mehdi gets a victory over Isis Verbeek. We've talked about Isis Verbeek before. She's fought on Infusion and so on. And then E. Mehdi meets Anissa Mexen in the final. E. Mehdi forces an extra and a second extra. And most people thought that Anissa Mexen had won clearly in the first two rounds. And then the last extra, she loses the fight. And a lot of people are upset by it because they thought Anissa Mexen won. But, you know, shout out to E. Mehdi getting herself, you know, a Chinese fighter, you know, emerging on the scene. Right now, the female Chinese fighters are doing a good job of getting themselves international recognition and getting themselves international high-level wins. They're doing that much more consistently than the men are. And Imedi getting this win is still solid, despite the fact that it's got a cloud of suspicion around it, because it just... Anissa Mexen is elite, and a lot of people thought that she had the decision pretty clear before they forced extras. Almost like people say it when they look at the Remy Bonjasky versus... there's a lot of guys that it happened with were coming to Remy, but in particular, nothing was worse than him and Musashi. And Musashi in that second fight, the second K-1 World Grand Prix fight, where they called for an extra and then another extra, when everybody was just so certain that, hey, it's clear that Remy's winning this. And then they interviewed Remy about it, and he goes, it was so clear to me that they wanted Musashi to win so bad. They wanted him to win so bad. And it would have been good for the brand in Japan if Musashi had won. But the best fighter should win, and that was Remy Bonjasky, and he ended up getting the W that day. I think that that's what Anissa Mexen's team feel like here, that they kept pushing the fight until they can get the right winner that they wanted, which is weird because they don't normally do that for this Chinese brand. Most of their fighters just, you know, do their best and lose to some of the elite guys internationally. But Anissa Mexen, she loses, Imedi wins, and then we'll see Imedi against other athletes moving forward. She's very, very talented. Definitely want to see her against, you know, your Amon Barlows and the best in the world at the division. So next fight I want to talk about is with Wang Qihan, who is one of the elite women on the planet, and she's one of the few women that has KO pop. She gets a victory over Michelle Mitchell. And I'm telling you, Wang Qihan, it's just a name to pay attention to because she can really crack. Like, her hook is legit. And she's been working a lot with Jemima Bertrain, who were probably in the fight of the year last year as far as women's fighting goes. After that, they became really, really good friends and trained together all the time. Wang Qihan with another victory there. I will do my best to bring her name up and post one of her fights maybe to my Twitter account, just so people can see who I'm talking about. The girl's very, very talented, and she can crack. She can legitimately punch. Next fight we're going to get into is the middleweight tournament for this. We had Zvik Kyria getting a victory over David Calvo. Zvik Kyria, this is the fight that I expect him to kind of win. David Calvo gets a lot of international opportunities. He has yet to really get elite-level international wins. He might have something, a fight here and there, but for the most part, he's just a serviceable guy to fill your cards and get international experience with. Zvik Kyria, once upon a time, glory champion, thanks to his comeback victory it's definitely comeback of the year. I've always been torn on whether or not that should be considered fight of the year, as I keep, you know, revisiting that card, you know, and I keep revisiting that year in fighting. But, you know, when he came back, and he won the title that, you know, special night, you know, what was that? I'm trying to think, was that the Croatia card? I'm pretty sure that was the Croatia card. Yeah, pretty sure it was the Croatia card where he fought Andy Risty, but that comeback was, to me, the pinnacle. Like, at the moment he won the title over Andy Risty, I was like, okay, they're going to put him against Robin van Roosmalen next, because Robin has his number. And after he beat Robin van Roosmalen, he went ahead and, you know, you just kind of watching the flow of his career and the flow of how he fights. After he beat Robin van Roosmalen, he went out there and had what I would consider a pretty solid run. He had a pretty solid career that was the height of it. After that, he's lost to Sitichai. He's lost to Robin van Roosmalen. This type of tournament, though, is where I expected him to excel. I expected him to do really good things. Him beating Kyria made sense to me. Victor Nagby beating Zianis Zioev of Belarus went to an extra round, but Victor Nagby, I really like him a lot. More people should use Victor Nagby on their kickboxing cards. Muay Thai, he's just a good guy. This Australian fighter is just, he gets those opportunities, but man, I really think that he should focus heavily on fighting on a K-1 or a Glory type brand, because he really is an entertaining fighter to bring in. And then that tournament ends with did they finish the tournament that night? Hold on, let me double check. I'm just kind of reading the results off to you guys. Sorry, can't find it. I thought they had the tournament final on there. It could have. I thought that there was a chance that Kyria won the whole tournament, but I don't see that. They might be doing that fight another time, so my mistake there. But the only problem that I have, and I love the brand of Kunlun, is they do so many fights and so many cards, it's hard to keep up. Another, you know, result that I want to bring up to everybody's attention, which is a really good one, is Jotun Klai beats Askarov. Jabba Askarov versus Jotun Klai, we're talking about two guys for the Contender Asia. That fight is something that should get more recognition. More people should know about it, and not enough people do know about it. It's just the nature of how the sport is working itself out. It's really tough, the consistency that they have with their brand. I think that they put on enough fights and they have decent crowds and they do what, you know, it's like a television show, so they do it on a regular basis. I'm pleased with the brand, but man, they are all over the place, you know. Valentina Shevchenko, you know, is going to be fighting for them and fought for them. She's an elite fighter. We need to know about that. Slow things down. Let us know what you're doing. Right now, it just seems like they're throwing fights together, and every once in a while, they'll make sure, you know, they have enough Chinese fighters win, but they're mixing international fighters in there. It's awesome in terms of helping people become career kickboxers. Very, very important that that keeps happening, so it's awesome as far as that goes. It's not good as far as how are we going to have that roadmap? How are we going to know who's the best? How are we going to know how significant a win is? That stuff's got to matter. So, but good stuff by Kun Loon by at least giving kickboxers regular opportunities to compete. We now go over to Lion Fight. And Lion Fight had what I believe was probably my most entertaining. Watching that card, it was the most I felt entertained. I really thought that I got some good international fights. Some high level, some just good level. But all in all, it was just an entertaining card top to bottom. I'll go ahead and run off some of these results. Ming Freeman versus Jason Andrada. It's an interesting one because Fitzgibbons, the coach at CSA, he always corners him. And Fitzgibbons also cornered Cosmo Alexander. He can be found on Twitter as CSA Jim, at CSA Jim. And he's in the corner. And, of course, Andrada's, you know, really playing well, scoring points well early. Ming slowly finding spots, taking good breaks, losing on the cards, but really exploding when he gets his opportunity. Freeman goes into round five, guns blazing, understanding that he's got to score down or do something significant to get back in the fight. Jason goes to the corner. Fitzgibbon is just yelling at him because you can't go to your left. Keep going to your right. He's trying to keep him out of danger. It's like the right hand's fine. You got to go the other way, if I'm remembering it correctly. But he goes the wrong way during the fight. And at that time, Freeman had started off hot, scored some big shots early, gets dropped. It's like you hear a coach say it. The coach loves you, wants you to excel. And just in the heat of things, it just happens. I've been working with athletes for a really long time. Sometimes in the heat of the fight, things like that kind of go through one ear and out the other. Or they are computed, but the moment you get hit a few times, you just start focusing on what you're going to do, how you're going to score, and it just goes away from you that you're in trouble or that the guy can get you. It's just kind of how it happens naturally. I look at that, and I look at, you know, Freeman turning on. After he scored that down, Freeman was able to back him up, landed a straight right hand that scored a big down, and that ended the fight on Andrada. Really, really powerful stuff. Good win for him. Clearly, as a coach, you want a guy to do well. You want him to win. And you give him the words that you feel will put him in the best position to succeed. But it just has to be said that, man, it's Andrada will look back at that and go, wow. Corner was trying to tell me, you know, it just didn't happen. Joe Gogo gets a victory over Marvin Madariaga. Madariaga, of course, Marvin's one of the guys who they've been selling on the brand as the it stars moving forward. And I thought that it was a good back and forth fight. Marvin's still a little bit hittable for me, but I still think that he does a lot of slick stuff. I think he's going to be a really good Muay Thai fighter, kickboxer, whatever he decides to do. I thought that Gogo was able to score the right type of shot, right type of cut, and that got him the victory, and I could see Marvin was upset. It was an awesome fight. I wanted to see more of it, but considering Joe Gogo, I don't think he came in. I think that was short notice. They were looking for an opponent for him for a while, and he came in, and that was a big-time victory for him, big-time stuff. Got to say, you know, shout-out to him and his team. They really did a good job of going out there and against the bigger odds of going against pretty much the company fighter, he was able to get a victory, and that can be tough to do. Romeo Danza had a Romeo Danza type fight. Anthony Castrijan came out there and was winning this fight handily. Romeo Danza always playing behind, never able to score anything significant, never able to score anything consistently, looking to load up on shots. He's pretty much getting, you know, touched up, losing on the cards. Bang. Right hand scores, fight is over with. That is Adanza's identity forever. forever. Adonis doing a good job from bouncing back, because I remember when in K1 he took that bad KO, that head kick KO, and not only was it a bad KO, but it was in front of his people, and people thought that he would not recover from that, because it's tough to get stopped in front of your people. And this happened in California. He had a big crowd there. They don't even have his weight class in K1. They just put the fight on because he's a good local draw. And he was a name that people in the area knew. And he went out there and he got stopped. And I remember people thought that was going to be the end of him. Flash forward a few years later. First of all, he had no hair then. He's got crazy hair now. And he comes out and he performs in these two line fight fights the same way. He is losing on the cards pretty significantly, pretty easily. And as soon as the shot lands that he needs to land, he drops the guy and he gets a stoppage. He is a fighter. Like this guy, he'll stay in there. That is his game. He understands that you're going to be able to point him. Not to the level of Anawat. You know, Anawat, of course, Anawat in his early days, he was doing against the elite ties in the world, where he was the fight of the year 2 years in a row, where he'd be down on the cards, but he would throw something in combination and get a KO, and that's how he'd be back in the fight. Adonza isn't going against that level of opposition, but he's still that level of that type of fighter. And Adonza, always in the fight, scores big KO. Michael Emmer defeats Jake Paus. First of all, Jake Paus is like the biggest middleweight in the world. This guy was huge. It looked like he was a light heavyweight from jump. Big guy. It was an entertaining fight if you like guys who just keep pushing and throwing, but it did get a little sloppy. Wasn't the cleanest affair for sure. And Michael Emmer, in two performances on Lion Fight, even though he's able to win them both, he does slow later in fights. It's not as technical. It's holds a little bit more. Huge periods of inactivity. It's just it's different. It's definitely different how it works for him. You know, I gotta say that it's not what I think should look like. If he were to be going against a Simon Marcus, I think he'd lose, and that's his weight class, because Simon is so big and strong for the weight class. His clinch is legit, and he's just going to keep going forward, and he's going to have the energy to fight five. That's what we got to get from him. I've got to get some consistency from Lemaire as far as his cardio goes, if he's going to be an elite guy in the world, because right now he's not an elite guy in the world at that weight class in Muay Thai. He's a guy who's getting wins and he's being moved, but he's going to struggle with, if he fought Artem Levin in Full Rules Muay Thai, he would struggle. Rita Bears gets a victory over Martina Jendrova. Again, Martina Jendrova, was originally supposed to fight Cyborg, I said before, and then Martina Jendrova was out with an injury. They put in Urina Bars. Next thing you know, Urina Bars is the Lion Fight champion and the one that the promotion is pushing. Urina came out there doing what she does, kickboxing well. And she actually did a better job in the clinch in terms of not being kind of bullied and controlled there. They just kind of went to stalemates. I still think Urina needs to focus on being offensive there. Like, she needs to look to throw knees and elbows when she's in clinch. She just waits for stalemates so that they can get separation. The only thing that helped her this time was Jendrova looked for a stalemate too. So they went back to space. Martina Jendrova would load up on big shots and just, you're going to bear his chin is legit. So she's just going to take those shots and just keep pushing forward, keep throwing offense. And the moment that Urina kind of had a lazy moment where sometimes, and it happens, you watch all of her fights, she has these moments where she'll do something and she'll spin and she'll be off balance or just put her guard up, and it's like she'll wait for the fight to just kind of casually go back to letting her get back to her kickboxing space. She got lazy with that in the third round. She took an elbow from Jendrova that landed right under her eyes on the cheek, and it was a good cut. But they did a great job in the corner. Shout out to Andre Menard. Great job in the corner of making sure that didn't, become a hindrance down the fight. It wasn't in the eye anyways. So they did a good job of letting this one go. I actually thought that the Marvin Mariaga should have been allowed to go. But then as I looked at it again, it made sense to me that, okay, if they're seeing the bone on that cut, then you got to let it go. Just my penchant for wanting to see sporting violence. I wanted it to keep fighting. But Urina Bars, that was her only fault. Turns around, her teep was mean. She scored it so many times. She kept dropping. Because Martina was looking to load up on shots. Excuse me. It was easy for Urina to score those shots consistently. Teeps that sat her opponent down and so on. So she gets a 5-round decision. Next up, Antonina Shevchenko is another good option. Amanda Kelly, that's another name of a. She's been focusing on MMA, but she's 1-3 in MMA. So if she were to return to Full Rules Muay Thai, that's another good option. There are women out there that will fight you're in a Bears. I know they said they were struggling to find their opponents. I don't know if that's the case. I can find the opponents. I know there are names of people who want to fight you're in a Bears. Last fight on the card is Cosmo Alexander versus John Wayne Parr. John Wayne Parr, 39 years old now, but it shows how loved he is by the kickboxing community, by the Muay Thai community. Good support there on the West Coast. It was really cool to see his family affair. His daughter comes out with the Australian flag and wife in the corner. And it was really, really good stuff. Cosmo Alexander goes out there, as usual, one corner. Usually uses a corner from somebody else's team to help the other spot. Fitzgibbons was in the corner this time. Cosmo's good people and really good guy. Of course, he's a spiritual guy. You know, you see in the, you know, he's got something saying, you know, Jesus is Lord or something, always talking about his relationship with God there. So we're talking about the two good guys in the sport. John Wayne Parr, just a great dude. I'm telling you, back in the day, John Wayne Parr on the fight forums was huge because he was the fighter that interacted with us the most. He was always on the fight forums, Kakutugi, K1 USA, and K1 fans. It's just awesome that he was that open. And, you know, Cosmo was on there too. And it's cool to see that those guys, once upon a time, Cosmo Alexander, John Wayne Parr had the offensive output, walked him down through offense, and was able to win a 5-round decision pretty easy because Cosmo sits in the power, waits on significant shots, and he didn't score the one that he needed to get the win in the first one. Second one, tournament, they meet in the second round of the tournament. Cosmo Alexander scores a low kick stoppage over John Wayne, who had taken some in the first fight. So this is going to be, as they say, the championship of each other. And this third fight showed a confident, strong, mean Cosmo Alexander, who brought the fight from the beginning, definitely was aggressive, looking to get in there with John Wayne Parr, looking to push the pace. I had Cosmo winning all 5 rounds. I thought John Wayne Parr, the thing that made him special was his offense. Like, he used to throw in bunches all the time. Like, that was the thing that made, if you knew anything about him, if you knew anything about what you were going to get in a performance from him, you knew as a fact you were going to get a guy who could just, you know, throw offense that would keep his opponents behind their guards and get big shots through and just pace. He's never been a big clinch guy, but he's been a guy whose volume just ran you over, ran you down. He was just too aggressive, too mean, too strong. This time, he was older and he had a flurry where he did his old kind of punches where he just kind of threw a lot of shots, and Cosmo blocked all of them in his guard, literally all of them. I don't think any of them really got through. And then Cosmo went to work mean in the clinch, had a lot of dumps. Of course, John Wayne Parr, you know, he's cut on his way to the ring because he's always been susceptible to cuts. And Cosmo did just such a great job of scoring big time shots and, you know, consistently, you know, pushing the pace, cut Wayne, I want to say, in the second. And it was just, the fight was just all his. So just from jump, it was all his. Cosmo Alexander gets the win here. But the card, top to bottom, was so entertaining. I was so into it. You know, Alexander and Parr were good friends, good people afterwards. It was a fun event. It was a good night for Lion Fight. It's my favorite night watching their fight cards. And hopefully they can just develop consistency from here, get more people interested and so on. And we'll see what comes of the brand. I will be back to do this show again. I'll be back on Wednesday to do my glory kind of breakdown. But I really appreciate those for listening. You guys have a good week. God bless. And, man, keep supporting kickboxing. Do your best to, wherever the glory is going to be seen this weekend, whether it's a $10 pay-per-view or it's going to be on some TV provider, do your best to go out and watch kickboxing and support the brand. It's a wonderful sport, and I think you'll enjoy it a lot. So thanks a lot, and everybody have a good one. See you on Wednesday. Peace.